Welcome back to In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh. Kevin Wooster is ready for the pheasants, and if the birds are scarce, the conversation is still robust and the Sloppy Joes are still warm. You can find his blog at sdpb.org/Wooster on the third weekend in October. I think you already know where you might find him. Kevin Wooster joins us now from Rapid City. Kevin, welcome back.
It's great to be back, especially going into the finest weekend of the fall.
All right. What have you heard about the pheasant numbers in the area where you're planning on heading out to?
Well, I have to confess, you're going to get a kick out of this because I'm actually not going to go pheasant hunting on Saturday.
Well, I thought you were going on Sunday, though.
I am going on Sunday.
Okay,
Saturday,
close enough.
Saturday I'll be at an event down on the Pine Ridge Reservation, a rare event where they're beginning a canonization process for Nicholas Black Elk.
I really want to talk to you about that, but we better talk pheasants first.
Well, and I'm going to cover that. I'm going to write something about that
next week.
So we'll have a chance to do a really close look at Nicholas
and
the whole Black Elk effort. But that's about the only reason that I would miss this, and it was hard. But we'll be there on Sunday. We'll be out around Reliance, on the McManus side, the Irish side of my family and my mother's side, and a place we've been going for a long time, as so many other families across South Dakota will be doing this weekend. People coming back from all over. Some people won't come, maybe because bird numbers are down, but most will, and we certainly will, as I talk about in my column.
And this is fascinating to me because, as I think most people know by now, I don't come from a hunting family. No one in my family hunted that I'm aware of. And the heritage and the depth of the connection and of the experience that you describe in this column that you're working on for this week, on the other hand, it's fascinating. I feel like I missed out.
Well, I can tell you that growing up, I couldn't sleep at all the night before the pheasant season.
Really?
Even when I was just walking with a BB gun, you know, when you were 8 or 9 years old and you got to walk next to your dad and carry a BB gun. Or my first pheasant hunt when I was 10, when I got my first 410, which is a little earlier than they let you hunt now, but we were on our property. And couldn't sleep at all. And maybe for a couple of days before. And the whole town would be excited and energized. It would be a festival. Airplanes would be flying in and Chamberlain and some of the small airports out in the river country where I grew up, from all over the country. Personalities would be coming in, Clark Gable, Billy Martin, baseball personalities, professional wrestlers, I mean actors. It was it was amazing, and it still is amazing in the same type of ways.
All right, how many years back do you think people in your family have been going out to hunt on this same land?
Well, I've been hunting pheasants for 56 years this year.
Wow.
Because I'm 66 next month, and I got it started officially when I was 10, even though I was going out before that. And I was talking to my cousin Donnie, who's kind of the master of the hunt now. He took over for his dad, Red, when Red passed 4 years ago. And, we know that it goes back at their place for over 40 years, but then he makes reference to, then it was up at Uncle Hank's, and that was my dad, Henry. And we figure out it moved around a little bit from Wooster's to McManus's. We're thinking 60 or 70 years for sure, and maybe longer than that. And, as you know, I talk about in the column a family that goes back even farther than that.
Let's talk about that story because there are so many layers to it. So tell me a little bit about Dennis Wagner.
Well, I actually got this from a tip. Deborah Jensen is a former news person. She runs coffee shops here, and she was working Sunday morning as Mary and I were leaving town. Said, "You got to talk to this guy, Dennis Wagner, a banker here in town and from the Alexandria area." And she said his family has been going out since 1920. And I said, "Well, the season opened in 1919, and that was one county only, Spink County. Redfield and Spink County had a one county season in 1919. That was the first season, one day, I think, if I remember right. And then the next year opened up across the state, and that's when they started hunting. The Wagner family started. The two sons of a banker." There in Henry Wagner at the Farm Estate Bank in Alexandria went out, and their families, their sons, their grandsons, their great-grandsons, now their great-great-grandsons have been going out on Wagner family land ever since, opening weekend.
So many stories here. Let's talk a little bit about, is it Henry? a Wagoner and just the heritage of this land itself.
Yeah, I mean, there was some, it was somewhere in there, and you know, if I may mention, kind of an aside, which I do on these stories, is this was a guy who, back in the Great Depression, before the bank closed, bought promissory notes for friends and family members, and took those promissory notes literally to his grave. He prevented them from losing their ground at a great expense to himself, as he knew this bank closure was coming. He bought up these notes, and Dennis, who I was talked to, when his dad died, he found this last will and testament with this long list of promissory notes that all became, you know, forgiven on at the death of Henry, and you know, that just says so much about that man and about some of the things that people were doing right there back then to try and help people hold on to their land.
Right.
And you know, when they hunt that land, it's about the pheasants, but it's about coming back to their land. And that's the way it is with me, whether I go back to Worcester land or McManus land, to stand on that ground, to renew that ritual of community and family and the great outdoors, as we know it in South Dakota every fall, and this bird that's not even really, you know, it's not even a native, but we've come to embrace it completely in this state. Bird that was introduced around the turn of the century and has done so well here and done so well by us in so many ways.
So over the years, you've been through droughts and you have been through all sorts of, you know, rising and falling of the pheasant population, different, and as you point out in the column, different life experiences, sort of, you know, between a hunt, life happens and so does death.
Yeah.
And some people don't come back to the next hunt the following year. But let's talk a little bit about the birds themselves and the land, and how have you watched previous droughts or previous harsh years, you know, impact that coming home?
Well, let's keep that in perspective. I mean, like I said in the column, when Jim said, well, they're going to be way down, and I said, are they still going to have sloppy joes? Are we still going to gather around in the shed and tell lies? Are we still going to see Ruth Ann and Donnie and Larry and, you know, all the, yeah, well, I'm going. Are you going? Sure. And of course we'll go. And these things go up and down. These are birds that fluctuate with habitat and with weather. And just to keep things in perspective, I looked back, and since the 1970s, early 1970s, when I started covering news in South Dakota, and let's say since 70, there have been 22 years when we've had at or lower pheasant populations than we're predicted to have this year. So almost half of the years since 1970, the pheasant population has been where it is, where it's estimated to be now or below that. I mean, we've had remarkable pheasant numbers at certain stretches, and one of those stretches was recently. But let's remember, we're talking about, you know, the estimate that he come up with is maybe 4.5 million pheasants or 5 million pheasants this year, and a very rough estimate. In 1976, they estimated 1.4 million pheasants. That was a terrible drought year. And you just go through those. You try and hope for better weather cycles. You try and build your habitat base up. Senator Thune was talking about that prior to this segment. And you know they're going to come back because they're a resilient bird. And if they have a place to live and if they get a break on the weather, they'll rebound, you know, fairly quickly. But in the meantime, I'm going to hunt. I'm going to hunt with my dog when I'm serious about hunting, because I hunt no matter if there's 2 birds or 1,000 birds on a patch of ground. I'm going to take the dog out, and we're going to do that because I need to do that. And I'm also going to go back and see my kin, and I'm going to visit the cemetery with my brother where our kin lie buried, and we're going to do the things that you do in October every year if you're a South Dakotan with that family connection.
Let's go back to the Wagoner story, Dennis Wagoner story, and talk about their phone call home that they got from one of their kin.
Dennis Wagoner choked up when he told me that story down in the bank, and that was a ways back. In the fall of 2005, they were hunting, and his cousin Greg was in a staff sergeant with the South Dakota National Guard serving in Iraq, and missed the opening day, but called and spoke to all the family members in the field that day, and they were out in the field. And Dennis said it was so cool to talk to him. We were just out there doing the thing, and he was teasing us about, we were telling lies, and we were saying who was shooting good and shooting bad. And then he paused, and he said, and that's the last time I ever talked to him. Yeah. And that's because Sergeant Wagoner died in Baghdad a few months later when his vehicle hit an IUD, and he was 35 years old. And, you know, that's that's the last memory that, that Dennis and a number of the cousins have of their cousin, was talking to him while they were in the pheasant fields months earlier before his death.
And who knew when the pheasant opener approaches and you sit down to write about it, that so many stories about life and death and resilience and faith and ritual and land would come out of just that one event. You knew that.
I did.
Because you experience it every year.
Every year. If you, you talk to people in Hutch's Cafe in Presho, or you stop at Al's Oasis, or you in Ocoma, or and there are people there, and they're exchanging those stories, and they're making new ones, because as I said in the piece, life happens between every pheasant season to the next, and unfortunately sometimes death happens, and those are things to be talked about as well.
Do people from out of state who come here for the season, do they have a similar but different story? Is it a ritual and a connection for them, or is that really only found when you have that history on the land that you do?
I think it certainly is a connection that they have, and it becomes a wonderful relationship. I met my first Jewish family pheasant hunting because they were road hunting around our house and our farm. They're from Sioux Falls, and they stopped and asked to hunt, and my dad said sure, and they came back the next year, and they became a close friend, a group of them, and we began to learn something about a culture and a tradition and religion that I didn't know anything about because of pheasant hunting. Huh. And I think, so you don't have to be, you know, grounded and rooted in the land here to understand it, but I think you understand it in a special and a slightly different way if you are, and so that everyone coming in will bring back a love and a joy and a connection. I think ours is a little bit of a different connection, maybe a little bit deeper connection.
Kevin Wooster, I'll say it one more time. You should write a book, and maybe in some ways you already are. For now, you can read his blog at sdpb.org/Wooster. Kevin, thanks so much for being here. We'll see you next week.
Sure will.